motherhood. One minute, you're mom of the year.
I love you, Mommy.
Then the next? Not so much. From bath time to bullying, from potty training to puberty, parenting is full of challenges. But one thing is for certain, you are not alone. Welcome to Modern Mom Probs. I'm your host, author, mother, parenting expert, Tara Clark. Join me while we tackle today's modern mom problems. Hey there, welcome back to Modern Mom Probs. I am your host, Tara Clark, and here on Modern Mom Problems, we're trying to solve the world's problems, but you know, if we can't do that, at least we're having fun talking about them. Today's topic is how to get dads involved with the invisible labor. I am joined by Zach Watson, recovering man-child invisible labor educator. Zach Watson is a popular content creator and coach spreading the word about mental load, emotional labor, decision fatigue, and invisible labor, especially to men, by offering his real-world examples from his own life. Zach, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tara.
I'm so excited that you're here. We were chatting for a few minutes before we officially hit start, and I was asking how you were, and you were sharing a story with me, and I think that it deserves to be on air. So I'm going to ask you that question again. So how's everything going with you, Zach?
It's an odd place, I feel like, in life right now, where we've just had some really monster growth in my life and Alyssa, my wife's life. Just 3 weeks ago, I left my corporate job to go full-time as a coach and content creator. And at the same time, 2 days ago, we put my first and ever dog down, which has been a really interesting navigation of emotions. I've even thought about reaching out to a couple. I have moments where it's like, it's even hard to be with our toddler because she doesn't understand. She's 2.5. And you know, I just hug her a little tighter and, you know, sometimes we're just visibly sad and upset in front of her. And, you know, she's been really beautiful and saying like, are you sad? And then she'll give us hugs and not quite knowing how to navigate that. And I rarely plug into my intuition, but I feel like I've been trying to use more intuition, less logic these past couple of days, like in how to talk to her about moments when I'm or Alyssa's feeling upset. But I've had moments of like wanting to reach out to other people thinking like, how would I feel? Like, I think I would be much more numb, like if it were a child or something or if Alyssa were gone. And I keep wanting to reach out to other people that I know have lost humans in the, you know, the past year, just to reach out to them. Cause I know that weighs. And I listened to this podcast not long ago of dads that had lost children or like miscarriages. And they were talking about like how to be an ally for those guys is to, you have your troopers that show up on that first week. And then for the most part, a lot of people don't check in with you nearly as much 2 months down the line, 4 months down the line, 7 months down the line. And so I was thinking that it would be a good use of my moment of grief to help empathize with some of the other people in my life that I know are dealing with stuff.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about Aspen. It's just heartbreaking. There are no words to put it because our dogs, our cats, our pets, they're a part of the family. So it's not so far off, you know, when you're saying about losing a member of the family because they're a piece of our hearts. And so I'm so sorry about that.
Thank you.
So I want to get into what we're going to get into today. Zach, you call yourself a recovering man child.
Do.
And you are just And you're just absolutely blowing up on socials. You share videos about sharing the mental load. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I think the most relevant, that's a really wide question. Can you narrow it down like a tiny bit?
Well, I don't know. I usually ask people and they say like, you know, I am a husband. I am a father. I am sometimes they're writers, they're coaches, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
How do you fill your day?
How
do you fill your day?
I wake up and think about making videos and then I make videos. And then I think I do some parenting and partnering and think more about videos to make and how I can impact the guys that I coach. And I have 10 hours a week that I'm spending with groups of men that are trying to better understand the mental load, that are trying to be better partners, have heard significant amounts of disapproval from their partners that they're probably not carrying the mental load that they want them to be. So I would say I'm a content creator. I'm a coach. I was previously a math teacher for 8 years. I was in sales for 2 years. I'm a parent. I'm a partner, a husband. I'm a owner of 3 goats and 2 cats and no longer a dog. But I think that covers the majority. I guess I'm a self-published author, and I think in the next 2 years I'll be a not self-published author, but someone else will publish me. I'm working on a book.
Yeah, that's awesome. How did you get into this whole topic of the mental load in the first place? Obviously, there must have been some sort of impulse.
I had always wanted to be a content creator. I mean, if we want to add more labels, I could call myself a rapper too. I have about a dozen, I swear this relates to your question, about a dozen music videos from back when I was a teacher. Back in 2016, I finished writing my self-published book, Ideas Over Coffee. And then I was like, well, how do I advertise this? I don't have any kind of following. So I started making YouTube videos because my students were all about YouTube videos. They loved their YouTubers. And I was like, I didn't even really get what a YouTuber was when they first told me about it, which is ridiculous for 2016. Maybe it was 2015. No, it was 2016. So I started making, Ideas Over Coffee was 104 ideas that changed my life by age 26. And so I started making they're these super small bite-sized videos of like 2 pages we're talking. And so I started making YouTube videos based on that to give them like the life lessons I wanted to give them that I was frowned upon for giving them in math class. I remember we did goal setting for, I don't know, 90. They were like a little over 2 hour blocks at the school I was working. It was insane. I spent 90 minutes the first week of two classes doing goal setting. And the department head's like, what do you mean you spent 90 minutes doing goal setting? When were they learning math? So I think content creation as a teacher was really important for me because it was like, there's so much I wanted to teach them outside of what I was told to do. I'm somewhere at this point, I've probably made about 4,000 videos between YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. And so I think a huge part of it was just, I loved making, started as a marketing campaign, turned into just a love for making videos, turned into rap music videos, turned into math tutorials, turned into life lessons. And at some point, honestly, it actually had a significantly negative impact on my marriage. In 2018, we bought a multifamily house. We had read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I was way more excited about it than Alyssa was. There's a significant amount of mental load I think she was expecting for me to carry that I was putting into YouTube, and I was not putting into the work that needed to get done that we had unspokenly expected me to do. I think she also had a lot of preferences, but at the same time, I think I turned into this like learned helplessness stage of like, okay, you want new doorknobs on all the second floor doorknobs? I'll go to Home Depot, get them, started installing them. These aren't the ones that I wanted. And we turned into this really crappy cycle of like me trying to get ahead and falling short because, you know, I wasn't communicating the appropriate amount and we weren't having regular, good, vulnerable conversations that were safe. And so we were separated for about 90 days, got back together, figured life out for a bit, and we're doing much, much better now. But we've gone through the gauntlet, I think. And I think coming back to your question of like what got me into this is I was all about personal development as a teacher. And then our child was born 2.5 years ago. I started talking about my experience of 3 months of paternity leave. And people are like, 3 months of paternity leave? Who is this guy? And so then TikTok was that was the first time I really ever had a following. That was my first like million. And then the same month, 5 million viewed video of me sharing that I was grateful for Alyssa and grateful for a lot of moms that make sacrifices to breastfeed their children. And I was on my night shift from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m., which a lot of people, I've coined the phrase a Karen catcher video, where it's like you, you almost like, you mislead them. I wasn't doing it on purpose at all, but they thought what I was saying was that we weren't feeding our newborn for 8 hours. And so then they didn't read the rest of the captions in the video. So they jump into the comments and then they show like how ridiculous their thinking is. And then I made 15 videos like making fun of the people that were incorrectly giving me shit. So yeah, that's kind of where
it started.
I love
that idea of Karen catcher. Yeah. I love that. I'm going to have to tell my other content creator friends about that line.
I ended up playing with it a little bit more. That was more when I was, actually the video that you've probably seen, the J.R. Minton, he's the UPS guy that has like, he talks about some feminist things. He had that video recently. He's like, I don't help with X, Y, and Z around the house. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's because I would say that's like the model of a Karen catcher, where it's like, someone's going to jump in the comments way too early. I think he just did a great job hooking people with that, but yeah.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. Sometimes these people, they can't help themselves. You know, like they have to get their opinion out there, whether or not they've watched the entire video or read the caption or whatever they were going to do. But the Karen catcher, God, that is funny. I'm 100% going to tell my friends about that. I love that. So now you're a Fair Play facilitator, which is amazing. Fair Play is awesome. I had Eve on the show last season. She is incredible. She is an absolute inspiration. So like, what does it mean to be a Fair Play facilitator? How did you get involved in that?
As I was on my content creation journey and I garnered probably 50,000 followers on TikTok, most of the moms, I started watching stuff from Laura Danger. I started watching stuff from It's Me, Abby E. And at one point, I think it was like July in 2022, I just made a video saying like, what book should I read next? Because I was listening to Notorious LGB, I can see Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I was reading that mm-hmm. book and there I was like, this is the kind of stuff that I like. And so they said, you should read Fair Play. So I read that and I did my reflections on the book kind of like as real time as I could, like right after reading it. And so I had this really wonderful community of women helping me better understand what I was learning from that book. Pretty uncomfortable. I got called out a lot, but it was like some really good development and growth that I got to have out of it. There are a lot of moments where some dumb stuff would come out of my mouth, but like, I think they'd come to understand me on a level that like they could give me the benefit of the doubt and like guide me in a better direction. I remember there was this video I talked about. Our kid was making choking noises and I was staying right next to her and she was just choking on her spit, which she did as a 1.5-year-old. My wife from the other room yells, "Is she okay?" Which, natural, appropriate question. And meanwhile, I'm like focusing on, like I'm locked in on her face, like trying to figure out, is there an obstruction or is she doing what she does, which is choke on spit? And I don't respond maybe for, I don't know, a couple seconds and she's still making that noise. And then she like kind of briskly walks in from the other room like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, like I'm assessing the situation. And she was upset that I didn't respond to her, which is fair. At the same time, I was mildly upset she didn't trust me to like kind of figure it out. So it was like, it was one of those moments of just acknowledging the emotional labor that she's holding over there. I think that was where I got the comment that blew open my understanding of the emotional labor of moms, was someone shared a comment of, there is a child that drowned with their dad at a pool in like a hometown. Their mom had been traveling that week, couple states away, an airplane trip away. And when the news came out that it happened, the mom was like blamed for that. She's like, I was multiple states away. What are we talking about here? So I really understood from a moment like that was like how often women are being held to this standard of like all knowing and making sure the husband is appropriately prepped to make sure that they go to the pool together. Like, I feel like I've gotten on a tangent, but that's like,
no, it makes sense. Yeah.
From Fair Play that I much further understood that I'm really glad I got to have like a public forum to discuss that book for the first time reading it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. I actually just had a podcast conversation yesterday with a woman who wrote a book, and we were talking about her book. And in that, she was sharing a story about how she was traveling for business and her husband was in charge of their two daughters, and her daughter requires medication, and he forgot to give her the medication. And so when the wife came home, she said, literally, like, I don't care if you didn't give them a bath, if they were wearing dirty clothes, if that, you know, anything else happened, but like the one thing was the medication was the only thing you absolutely had to do. And he's like, oh, well, I didn't know. And it's like, well, then that sort of becomes like a systems problem, in as much as like, maybe you have to lay it out in a certain way, maybe you have to like label it in a certain way. But then again, then that onus, what does that happen? That goes back to the mother to be the one to put the proper system in place so that the husband can follow along for next time that happens. And hopefully, because they had a conversation about it, that there isn't a next time that he forgets to give the child medication. But it's an interesting story that I heard just yesterday. And then here you are talking about that with the kid drowning. And so it just made me think about that. So you recently, Zach, had a video with Kristen Bell. How did that happen?
I think the universe just decided to throw me an opportunity, but I saw she commented on one of my videos in November. I'm pretty sure this is an exact quote. I am obsessed with these videos. And I remember getting DMs from people saying, congrats on Kristen. I was like, what, huh? And then realized that she had commented and that she was following me. And my first thought was, oh, I have DMs that are open. Like I can direct message rather than like sitting in a 3,000 long inbox. And so I said, you know, hey, hi, Kristen. I saw the comment that you left on my video today. Thank you so much. If you haven't noticed, my skits are pretty terrible. It would be really cool to have someone that does this professionally help me out with some of the acting. And so she said yes. And I then semi-shamelessly followed up for 6 weeks through the holidays. And she put 30 minutes on my calendar. And then we ended up talking for a good 90 minutes. But it was really cool seeing that, you know, that I'm going to speak to almost like an insecurity of mine is that I think a lot of times I think to myself, well, Zach, you're just a male talking about a female dominated issue, which gives you this like edge in being able to talk about it, because it's just a different perspective. Like when you see a white person talking about white privilege versus like, you know, it's just a little bit, you can cut to the top of the line sometimes just because you look different. And I think there was a moment, I think a lot of times I question like how valuable my videos are comparatively to like if my face looked different. And I think it was a moment where I felt a little bit more validation that maybe the way that I articulate, that I talk about things have merit in their own, that even if I was a woman, maybe, I mean, it would be still a little harder because it would be like, I would be talking shit about my husband, where my husband added mental load for me today. And so I would get called out for being a naggy bee. So I don't know if there's any way to escape that insecurity that I have, but at the same time, I think calling myself out and trying to articulate like those everyday little moments that pass by us. She said that I had articulated something that she'd been trying to describe with her mom friends for 10 years, which was really cool to hear.
This episode is brought to you by Modern Mom Style Box. Upgrade your wardrobe and enjoy unlimited styles for just $60 a month. Modern Mom Style Box is the first rental clothing subscription designed exclusively for moms and moms-to-be. Get started today with a free trial. Use promo code PTO.
Wow, that's wild. Like when I scrolled that, I think I saw it was on her account and I was just casually scrolling and I was like, that's Zach. They're doing a skit together. I thought that was so cool. And that particular video was about decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about decision fatigue, because I feel like that's a phrase that didn't used to be a phrase. You know, it's sort of like a relatively new phrase on a topic that we've felt for years.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know how old that phrase is. I feel like I mentioned it in a video maybe a couple months back, and it performed surprisingly well. It was like the only thing I think when people are like, yes, decision fatigue, now it has a name. I'm like, you guys don't know this word or you don't know this phrase? And I've known about it for, I wanted to say it was the book Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel K. something. Kaufman, maybe. I think I maybe read that or listened to it a decade ago. I want to say it was somewhere in there talking about just the way that humans think and the reason that our, you know, when we get into bad habits, it's because willpower is a pretty finite muscle that we have. So when you're deciding to make good choices all day and then you're hit with ice cream at the end and you still have to say no to that, like it's pretty challenging. And so I think it was breaking apart some of the psychology of our good decision making and how we do and don't make it. And so that's honestly not a new term to me. It was surprising to me that it's been new to a lot of people, but I've been discovering how validating a lot of moms have been feeling from hearing just the existence of that word. I don't even need to mansplain it. It's just like kind of it's pretty clear in its phrase itself.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know what? One of the things that I love about social media and everything that's going on in that landscape right now is that there are phrases and terms put to these feelings that people have been experiencing for such a long time, whether it is decision fatigue or the mental load or invisible labor or whatever you want to call it. These are not phrases that I was familiar with, let's say 20 years ago, right? But like now it's something that we use all the time. I mean, gosh, on my podcast and on social, like I talk about it all the time. But that's one of the things that I am so grateful for that has come out of social media in the last 5 years, or putting phrases to these things.
Yeah. And that's actually, a lot of people ask me like if they could have one takeaway. I think someone asked me like, why do you think you couldn't hear or understand, you know, mental load or domestic labor a couple of years ago? What did you need to hear then for that to be real? Now, I was a teacher, so I think that's part of the other reason that I'm decent at talking about it, is I think teachers have an insane amount of decision fatigue and do a lot of emotional labor for their students. And, you know, the amount of scaffolding that I have to do to make sure that the eighth grader that's still operating at a fifth grade math level be able to do, you know, linear equations when they still suck at their timetables. Like you have to put in a lot of thinking into how to articulate your question and how much of a calculator do you give them and all that stuff. I think that just adding the language to your home, to your workplace, is insanely valuable, like way more than people think. Like kind of like how compound interest is like one of the most, like I think Einstein said it's like one of the sixth wonder of the world or something. Like I think adding language that labels and points to things that are typically invisible is really, really valuable, because you have a new way to talk about it and articulate it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 1,000%. I often ask this of female writers, psychologists, you know, et cetera, content creators who talk about the mental load of motherhood. And I often say, what's the right way to approach our partner to have this conversation? But now I'm going to ask you, as a male, as someone who is a recovering man child, how can a woman come to their partner and say, I need help with all of this. I am drowning right now.
So first off, I'll say, please don't put this in a 90-second clip, because I stopped making the answer to this question in 90-second clips. Actually, you can if it brings traffic, and then we can just push another
podcast. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
So I stopped making videos about this because the answer is going to put more emotional labor on the women, which they've already been bearing. So we don't want to really add to their plate. What I'd like to think is that they're already doing the work. The question is, you know, they're swinging the bat and they're probably missing a lot because, you know, their husband's putting up a lot of defensiveness. So similar to what we were just talking about, adding language, what I would recommend is start including that in your day-to-day, but start using it objectively. So, you know, if right now you're drowning in mental load, how can we help him see it better in a way that he better understands? And so what I would say is he comes home and he's saying, oh man, my manager, like, he told me to do X, Y, and Z when we could have easily just automated this. Like, why does he make me do that? Wow. It sounds like he puts a lot of mental load on your plate, man. Like, every time Danny comes in the office and like brings it, has like his new suit, like, you just have to like massage his ego about it. Like, we get it. You have a new suit, bro. Like, yeah, it sounds like you do a lot of emotional labor to massage that guy's ego. So they're starting to, like, in a positive way, relate to those words as effort and work that they're doing. And so I think when they see it, you know, when I see Alyssa changing like a blowout diaper, I've done it before too. And so I know the pain and the challenge and the annoyance of dealing with it. And so I think when I've done the work and she's praised me for it, it's way easier for me to praise her for it and to see the effort going in. So I think if you're going to do emotional labor for your partner and them understanding it, drop those words in where they're doing the work. Or, like, you know, I know oftentimes if there's a neighbor or someone in the community that Alyssa doesn't really want to talk to, or we're at a dinner party, and she'll like nudge me and be like, all right, can you carry this conversation? Like, I'm good. And so, like, I will, you know, I'm an extrovert. As you can tell, I can clearly talk all fucking day. If she were coming back, if I didn't understand emotional labor and, you know, we came back out of, oh, thank you for managing that. That was some big emotional labor you did for me there. If I didn't know the word, I'd be like, what's emotional labor? But I would probably also be able to connect the dots too. So I think that's the best way to do it, honestly.
I think that's amazing. And I have to tell you that for all the people that I've asked, and I've asked a lot of people this question, including, like I said, someone yesterday on the podcast, your answer is the first time that I've heard that in that way. So it's novel.
What do they normally say?
And again, this is coming like from a female perspective. They sit them down and they try to have their partner put themselves in their shoes, but they weren't saying it in exactly the same way that you were doing it. So I particularly like your approach on that.
Thank you.
Because they're trying to have them empathize, but I think the key with getting them to empathize is using that phrase, how it relates to their life, whether it's at work, at the office, in sports, whatever, you know, whatever the guys are doing. And I like that because it makes more sense than just trying to get them excited to do the laundry. Because, like, I'm not excited to do the laundry. So how am I going to get my partner excited to do the laundry? No one's excited to do the laundry. You know, it's like, we're not gonna be like, rah, let's go do the laundry. Nobody wants to do the laundry.
Yeah, it's similar. Like, not that I love the idea that we're parenting our partners, but, you know, with our 2.5-year-old, like, we'll praise the shit out of her for new things that we're trying to help her understand. Like, thank you for being so patient. Wow, you're really patient waiting 15 seconds for me to have my turn of holding my phone. Like, Or what was the other one? Like, we praise the hell out of her for, we're trying to get into a routine of cleaning up her toys in the living room before we go to bath time. She put 2 dinosaurs back into their box, but like, we're doing high tens. Like, it was a celebration. Now, I'm not saying to do the celebration, but I think adults don't need that level of celebration, but I think acknowledgement in our efforts goes a really long way.
Yeah, 1,000%. Absolutely. So I ask this question of all of my guests, especially in season 3 now. What do you think is the biggest modern mom problem out there right now?
I feel like there just aren't enough men quite lean enough. I think I have the privilege of meeting a ton of them. One, because all the guys that come to like a first call to check out my services, like, they're leaned in enough that they know that there's a problem they need to solve and I might have an answer. And they've gotten on a call with me, which tells me I've helped them get their defense down just enough to book the Zoom call, whether it's to sign up and to start working with me and help take mental load off their partner's plate is a different question. But I mean, I've had over 100 calls since September, which I wasn't expecting. And I think there are more leaned in guys, but they don't get it. It's funny. A lot of times in my first conversation I'll have with them, I'll ask, you know, in the dieting world, in a lot of ways, the what is not a mystery, but the how is a mystery. The what is eat better, you know, exercise more. If information was the issue, dieting wouldn't be a $1 billion industry, but it's the how do we keep that? How do we implement that? And I think actually what I've found is a lot of guys don't actually know the what. So my answer to the what is having, I think this is going to be a long-winded answer. I hope I can cut it down, but
no, that's fine. We got time.
The work that women and moms are doing around the house in two ways is really not seen as valuable. And one is, I think, like paternity leave, maternity leave, and just general paid like parental leave. If that were being valued enough that we had government programs to pay for it, it would be like the government is now putting dollar value to the work that's being put in, which I'm sure you've heard the stats, like the unpaid labor of moms like ranges somewhere over $1 trillion a year, something like that. And then the other part to that point is, I think when we think about a meeting that we would have at work, we think, all right, let's get six of our teammates together and I'll spend 30 minutes to, so I was in sales, and let's talk about our pipeline. Like what deals do we have that are going down with these companies? And like, what are we doing to get those? And it feels like a good use of 30 minutes for not only us to share that, but see what the other guys on our team are doing and not waste our manager's time by having them all individual conversations, but having them all at once. We also have a planned one-on-one meeting with our managers every week. I had those for all year of the time that I had my manager, actually both years in sales, both managers. I had a weekly, probably 30 to 60 minute meeting going over the skills that I'd been learning, going over some of the calls and like reviewing them and like sharpening my blade a little bit. And just like generally like asking like, how am I doing emotionally? Checking in kind of. I think the reason we're not doing those at home is we have this like romantic notion that all the things that exist at home, like will just happen, that there's no value to the back end work that's happening there. Like we in business, like in corporate America, we block off time to do things. But if we were to attempt blocking off time to do the things that moms are expected to do, you would clearly discover that there's not enough time in the day. I made a metaphor recently of dishwashers have a really clear and obvious existence. You put dishes in them and then you take them out and you put the little soap in its dispenser. Of the spaces in a kitchen, it has a really clear job description, just like you would for like when you're applying for a job. Now, the drawer that has pens, pencils, and sticky notes in it seems more so like the dishwasher is like the 9-to-5 job. And then the sticky note pencil drawer that starts out either when you move in or when you clean house for spring cleaning, like that's what its existence is. And then 6 months later, I think all of us have a handful of twisty ties in there. We get a pencil sharpener. We get two different kinds of scissors. We get twine. We got batteries. We got all the things.
Mine is a hot mess. I actually just was in right before our call. I had to look for something and I like quickly, oh no, I was looking for batteries and I couldn't find them because I don't know, they weren't there. They should be there, but they weren't there. And then I like quickly like just shoved it, but you have to like kind of like continue to shove it to really get all of the stuff underneath. So yes, I totally understand about that drawer.
Yeah. And so the metaphor, right? Those are the expectations that we never talked about that maybe stay-at-home moms or moms in general are accountable for. And people get pissed. Well, why can't I put an apple in that drawer? Well, that's not part of its job description. Well, what do you mean it's not part of its job description? It doesn't have one. And that's one of the issues is we're not treating the roles that we play at home with the same level of specificity that we do in like corporate structures. And I think that's just a symptom of capitalist society is the way that we value structure and boundaries to people that are getting paid for their labor versus people that are not getting paid for it.
Beautifully said, Zach. Really, really beautifully said. Yeah, I love that. And that's why you have all of these followers on all of these platforms hanging on every word that you're saying.
Yeah, that felt really eloquent as it came out. I was like, that's some academic level stuff, Zach. What's happening right now?
No, it really did. It did. That is a good one. I don't know. That might be the soundbite. You know, you were saying don't use the other one before. I don't know. I'm going to have to play it by ear when it goes into post.
Hey, use as many as you want.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, Zach Watson, tell everyone, where can we find you online? Where can we call you up for coaching? Tell us all the things.
Yeah. I mean, I think my main account is probably on Instagram, Real Zach ThinkShare. It's funny. It started out as it was just a channel where I was thinking about it, sharing what I was thinking about, but it's kind of turned into, because we're sharing the mental load, I'm sharing the think.
Yes.
An accidental double entendre. But yeah, that's probably the main place people can find me. TikTok is Zach ThinkShare minus the Real. YouTube, Facebook. I do have a podcast that's still getting its legs under it, and I'm happy to give you a link if people want to book a call with me. I work directly with men to understand and implement redistribution of domestic labor. I work directly with men. Women are absolutely able to book the call and show up to it, and you know, the choices for the men. I think I provide a really safe space for them to grapple with these ideas. I think a lot of times, sadly, hearing it from their partner doesn't do it. But at the same time, like, you know, Alyssa can't hear things from me too. So I don't have too much shade about that. So yeah,
Like a common thing that you frequently hear from your clients? Like, is there a recurring theme that they come to you and say, like, I don't even know what it is. That's why I'm asking the question. But is this something that you hear over and over again from them?
I don't know if this is quite what you're asking, but I would say 98% of the guys that come to me say that, hey, you know, I've talked with my wife. She sent me a couple of your videos. I, you know, some of them really hit home, and I was able to like appreciate and understand like the issue I was causing. I think the reason that one of the things I've tried to do with my videos, as I said, one of the problems that moms have is like men aren't leaned in enough. I tried to deal with some of that problem by being a little bit more palatable. I try to throw myself under the bus first, so that guys can see me talking shit about myself and be like, oh, all right, he fucked up. Good, let's watch this. And then they see themselves in that. And then like, as I get, you know, the Blueberry Muffins video is my most viewed one, somewhere around like 18 million, I think, across platforms. I asked a really dumb question to my wife. She just pulled Blueberry Muffins out of the oven. And I asked her probably 30 seconds later, are these too hot to feed to our toddler? I could see them steaming. I literally watched her pull them out of the oven. I think I had asked her, do you want me to pull these out of the oven for you? And like, if I had taken an extra 2.5 seconds to think about it, I didn't need to ask her that. And one, the decision fatigue of pulling her off whatever task she was doing in the other room. And two, just like the emotional labor that she has to hold of that were the issues. But I was calling myself out first. And I think that makes it easier for other men to lean in, is when they see other guys leaned in first. Calling themselves out, reflecting on where they could have done better, and then having an opportunity to make changes.
That's awesome. Zach, thank you so much for the work that you do, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Modern Mom Probs. I hope you enjoyed our deep dive in today's problem with me, your host, Tara Clark. Join me next time when I'll be interviewing another great guest and tackling another modern mom problem. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and a rating. As always, you could head over to Modern Mom Probs on Instagram and give me a follow, or check out my book, Modern Mom Probs, A Survival Guide for 21st Century Mothers, available online wherever books are sold. Well, that's it for today. See you next time, folks.